Welcome to River Styx at Duff's. This is our 25th anniversary season, and it's great to see all you here. My name is Michael Castro. I'm co-director of the series, and tonight we have a great program for you. Great poets need great audiences. It looks like we've got a great audience here too. So we got to get close tonight. All right? And we are going to get close tonight. Catherine Bowman and Quincy Troop are on the bill, and things will commence momentarily. I do want to call your attention to the next two readings at Duff's. In January, there will be a reading on Monday, January 31st, featuring two Missouri poets. Suzanne Rodenbaugh will be reading here, who just recently moved to this area and will be doing her first major reading in St. Louis. Very fine poet. And she will be reading with James Bogan, a poet from Rolla, Missouri, who just came out with a new book. And in February, we're really thrilled at the lineup we've got in February. Will feature the great Native American poet Carter Rivard, and he will be reading with one of the leaders of the ethno-poetics movement, one of the most influential poets of the last 25 years, who read in the first Duff series and published in the first River Styx, Jerome Rothenberg. So you want to be here on February 21st for that reading. Well, without further ado, we're going to get going tonight. And we're going to start off with a poet you may have heard on the radio on NPR, where she does periodically poetry features. Her name is Catherine Bowman. This evening marks a reunion of sorts of her with Quincy. She studied with Quincy at Columbia University, and since has gone on to be a very highly regarded poet in her own right. She has published two collections of her own poems, Rock Farm and 1-800 Hot Ribs. They're both available at our book table, as is Quincy's new book, and I think Avalanche may be available also, his previous book. Kathy Bowman teaches at Indiana University. It's a pleasure to introduce her for her debut in St. Louis. Please give Catherine Bowman a warm welcome.
Thanks very much for me. This poem is called Blessed Be. Blessed, can you hear me in the back there? Is that loud enough? No? Can you now? It's all right. Blessed are the man and woman who fall easily to sleep, who each night slip into suits of iron and drop 7 leagues, who never quite finish their prayers. For them, the stars are stitches in velvet blankets, their bed a soft, cozy stable. The animals they count are always domestic and number just 1, 2, or 3. Their navels and eyes like goblets, filled only with sleep. Down Alpha and Beta, at last to Delta, the canyon where rises a pomegranate tree. A pomegranate tree, how they feed on her beautiful seeds, all their delicious, explosive flavors in their sleep. This poem is called Heart. Old Fang in the boot trick, 5-chambered asp, pit organ and puff adder, can live in any medium save ice.
The staff of sin and legend, charmed by Dolphy's flute or the first thunderstorm in spring, drowsy it stirs from the cistern, the hibernaculum, the wintering den of roots and stars, smells like the cucumber Aunt Doris served chilled with saltines on chipped blue willow. She grew clean sugar snaps and strings and had chiffon breasts we called pillows, and bird legs and itty-bitty fat fingers covered with diamonds from the mines in South Africa. The smell of cucumber, her mystery roses, light of all stars, heading out old Bandera to picnic and pick corn, the light so expert that for miles you can tell a turkey vulture from a hawk by the quiver in the wing. Uncle Pete, born on April Fools, died on groundhogs, pulls over not to piss, but to blow away any king or diamondback unlucky enough to be on the road between San Antonio and Cotulla. Some men can't stand mystery, know what I mean? Squinting from the back of the pickup into chrome and sun and shotgun confection, my five boy cousins who love me more than all of Texas and drink my spit from a bottle of Big Red on a regular basis, know what old Pete and his bejeweled bride and Carmen, the only one in the house not drunk by sunset, singing to the doves to fly away while ironing slacks and pillowcases, have long since forgotten. And that is, snakes don't die, they just play dead. That the heart exposed to so many scrapes, bruises, burns, and bites, sheds its skin, becomes sprouts, wings, and flies, becomes the 2-for-1 sparkler on the 4th of July, becomes what's slung between azure and cornfield, the horizon. If you don't believe it, place your right hand on it for the pledge like you've been taught. Feel the hearing so deep, limbless and near limbless, prefers the ambush to the hunt, sets a trap, picks a spot, begins the vigil, resorts at times to bluff and temper, swallows victims whole, tastes like hope, forgiveness, and memory, tastes like chicken. Thank you. This poem is called Charlie Parker Memorial Birthday Celebration, Tompkins Square Park. And I moved to Indiana about 3 years ago, and right when I moved there, I wrote a poem about living in New York, where I'd been living for a long time. And after I wrote it, I realized that I think I had kind of copied Quincy Troup's poem in a way from Skates to Berkeley. So it's kind of like that. But I think I sort of got the idea from him to the poem. I was telling you about that junkie wannabe from Wall Street who OD'd last week on Explosion 2000 on that street corner right over there, when kaboom, you kissed me smack on the lips just as confirmation kicked in. Just as Venus in two-tone dreadlocks and a skin-tight smock danced from the bandshell with her pet python bodyguard to All the Things You Are. Just as punk rockers rocked and flowered on sheets, sipped smoothies and smoked, their hair spirited to pastel auras, rosehip, island lime, a shade of blue just washed by rain. Just as Ukraine's checkmate as twin seesawed, as bikers crack smiles in the hari-hari, the slack tongue of sacks, the mommies and the poppies, just as. And they were doing the brothers in descending order, the three brothers Heath, Percy, Jimmy, call him Little Bird, and Albert Heath, with Milt Jackson on vibes, 72 and still working. Two boys in love grooved, one in white pants and sailor hat, the other wore an Indian head nickel belt that bedazzled. They sat on the park bench eating falafel. A man with one leg sold charms for a dollar for luck. For the music that day in the light, you could say it was all bell-bottomed and swayback, young-like. And your kiss, all at once I was riding a sparkling gold Schwinn bike. Something in my head went from full torpor to starburst, as if wetted by some wild vibrato.
Your kiss and the vibe's lick cleared my vision of fizz for an instant. What had been all midnight dragon was now a Tropicana pure and premium sharpened seed delivered as of this morning to the Santa Barbara Deli and Superetti down the street. Just like that, in your arms and the music and the light, I thought I might go plum or Pentecostal, lay down on the grass, recite Khalil, take up knitting, eat pickles, and marry you. Tell that priest to stop playing frisbee with the lab so we can say our vows right here and now before tenor madness ends. Oops, I forgot we're already married. Oh, well. On that day when nothing was wholesale or retail and the light, your love, and the music had cut through all past dues and get-rich-quicks, everything winged and taking off, a Yardbird suite released. Called No Starry. Do you have any scissors I could borrow? No, I'm sorry, I don't. Well, what about a knife? You got any knives? A good paring knife would do, or a butcher knife, or maybe a cleaver. No, sorry, all I have is this old bread knife my grandfather used to butter his bread with every morning. Well, then how about a hand drill or hammer? A bike chain or some bob wire? You got any rusty razor edge bob wire? You got a chainsaw? No, sorry, I don't. Well, then maybe you have some sticks. I'm sorry, I don't have any sticks. Well, how about some stones? No, I don't have any sticks or stones. Well, how about a stone tied to a stick? You mean a club? Yeah, a club. You got a club? No, sorry, I don't have any clubs. Well, what about some fighting picks, war axes, military forks, or tomahawks? No, sorry, I don't have any kind of war fork, axe, or tomahawk. Well, what about a morning star? A morning star? Yeah, you know, those spiked ball and chains they sell for riot control. No, nothing like that, sorry. Now, I know you said you don't have a knife except for that dull old thing your grandfather used to butter his bread with every morning and that he passed down to you, but I thought maybe you just might have an Australian dagger with a quartz blade and a wood handle, or a bone dagger, or a buoy. You know, it doesn't hurt to ask. Or perhaps one of those lethal multi-purpose stilettos. No, sorry. Or perhaps a simple blowpipe or a complex air gun. No, I don't have a simple blowpipe or a complex air gun. Well, then maybe you have a jungle carbine, a Colt, a revolver, a Ruger, an Axis bolt action repeating rifle with telescopic sight for sniping, a shot-off shotgun, or better yet, a gas-operated, self-loading, fully automatic assault weapon. No, I'm sorry, I don't. Well, how about a hand grenade? No. How about a tank? No. Shrapnel? No. Napalm? No. Napalm too? No, sorry. Well, then let me ask you this. Do you have any intercontinental ballistic missiles or submarine launched cruise missiles or multiple independently targeted reentry missiles or terminally guided anti-tank shells or projectiles? Do you have any fission bombs or hydrogen bombs? Do you have any thermonuclear warheads? Got any electronic measures or electronic countermeasures or electronic countermeasures? Got any biological weapons or germ warfare, preferably in aerosol form? Got any enhanced tactical neutron razors emitting massive doses of whole body gamma radiation? Wait a minute, got any plutonium? Got any chemical agents, nerve agents, blister agents, you know, like mustard gas? Any choking agents or incapacitating agents or toxin agents? Well, I'm not sure. What do they look like? Liquid, vapor, powder, colorless gas, invisible. I'm not sure. What do they smell like? They smell like fruit, garlic, Fisher soap, new mown hay, apple blossoms, or like those little green peppers that your grandfather probably would tend to in his garden every morning after he breaded his bread with that old knife that he passed down to you. You know, I found out that's true, that they sent a lot of the chemical weapons, chemical warfare with
hay and apples and flowers. Nice to know, just in case. This is called, every year I usually write a Christmas poem, so I'll read this one that I wrote today, so sorry if it's terrible. It's called The Lost Tree. At the end of our block, at the edge of the desert, lived a landlocked ex-sailor. Each year he would, in an old wooden rowboat, in a baptismal basin polished in brine, erect a massive Christmas tree made out of a mountain of tumbleweeds. His yard, like his voice, nothing but an ocean of cactus and gravel. The Adriatic is cold and deep and full of sharks, he would tell my brother as he pulled out cactus thorns from his palms and fingers. A festival of weeks, a sign of wonder and awe. The tree for us was like a giant ancestral trophy fish, a survivor of countless battles angling the ancients, wrapped as it was not in tinsel, but in garlands of buoy ropes and fishing wire, shiny lures and braided hooks, wrapped as it was in a laughing stock of shackling, a stream of smelt and smolt, the delicate oil smells of sky became the delicate oil smells of sea for children who had never seen the sea. From the nest of tumbleweed branches, he hung glass marbles and medals, epaulets, he said, from a ghost army of amputees. There were mouthpieces of musical instruments, strung sailor knots he called pharaoh hearts, driven rusted icicles, old shells, the nails and combings of his lover's lost hair, blue Christmas charms from a war bride's bracelet, reliquaries of animal scents, a lacquered ornament he called mother's milk. The tree was like a beehive in the belly of the Texas sky, a bitter aloe sky. It was a jeweled back of a reptile. It was a cartographer's fetish, though we didn't know those words back then. But what we were starting to know on Christmas Eve, long after we should have been home, that what's broken, hooked, rusted, and lost can be made into a thing of wonder. For who can say, in your search, if it's better to set your eyes to the star in the sky and the scent of incense, or to a punched, cut amulet made by an ex-sailor. Whoops. I don't have the last line. Oh, here it is. Let's see. For who can say, in your search, if it's better to set your eyes to a star in the sky, the scent of incense, or on a punched, cut amulet made by an ex-sailor from an old tin can of morals imported from France and tied to the top of a tumbleweed Christmas tree at the edge of the block, at the edge of the desert. Thanks. You didn't have to clap just because I wrote that. This poem is called Hoax. We made our moon into a vial of Mary's milk, our playing card marked with the 14 nails that fastened illusion to the cross. Under the cover of our salted diamond mine, the Pope was a woman, Elvis alive, and Bigfoot and Yeti often arrived. Complete with certificates and old wax seals, we constructed a forgery of Jonah's whale that each night we crawled in and cut our way out. A shroud of Turin sheet we used for a sail. Our bed was a blind horse that we bought. Our bed a wolf that we thought made a good watchdog. This is called Lessons. Summer nights, an aviary behind their bedroom door. Your father liked to listen to birdsong trip thongs on the hi-fi next to his bed. The complete set checked out from the local branch. A sea of obtuse, saline, and isosceles on the chalkboard. Beyond that green, the real green, the Gulf of Mexico, waves and sets of eights or threes. You were the first boy I ever kissed. We taught each other to triple in a cypress slipknot of vines we called the nest. One Sunday, your father took us sailing. As he talked, tact, and triangulation, the gulf stretched out to infinity, his eyes fixed on the bowline and trine of my lime green bikini. This is a prose poem that someone asked me if I would write for a book on the New Testament, to take a verse from the New Testament and write a poem about it. And so I didn't really know, couldn't decide what to write. So I closed my eyes, opened it, pointed to a line. And what the line I came across was Luke 24:40. And when he had thus spoken, he showed them his hands and his feet. And that was when he was, after Jesus had been crucified and he was coming back, and they stopped him on the street. And when he had thus spoken, he showed them his hands and his feet. So I wrote a prose poem called Jesus' Feet. And his feet, what were they like? Were they short and stubby, long and angular, milky blue, tree vein, delicate, like two rare fans, like two planks of stained and polished cherry, gnarled, five toes like river rocks, spindly? Was the hair whiskered or fleece? Were they calloused and cracked, caked with dirt and still bleeding, or had they healed during his visit? Were his toenails calcified from the desert, pearled from the ocean, his arches bowed, half moon, flat to the ground? Were they still fragrant from the tears, the vinegar, Mary Magdalene's dark hair, the costly oils imported from the Himalayas, the spikenard? Were his feet slightly webbed from walking on water? After his time in heaven, did he like the way the earth felt on his toes? Just a few days before, he had washed the feet of the disciples in this manner. One, he riseth from the table. Two, and laid aside his garments. Three, and took a towel. Four, and girded himself. Five, he poureth water in a basin. Six, and began to wash the disciples' feet. Seven, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. And he showed them his feet, and they saw not serum or syrup, but two maps containing the oceans and the land and the heavens, his footlines like the winds and the currents that coiled around the world and all the planets, so that their eyes opened all at once, and they saw woman's bound and wrapped feet. They saw bridegroom's feet washed in milk and vermilion, rows of feet chained together, heat waves rising from the gravel at dawn, the prisoners singing a prison work song. They saw two velvet-embroidered slippers. They saw feet red with fatigue from walking the night district, the feet of the shepherd crossing the valleys and tablelands, 10,000 soldiers marching off to war, children sewing shoes for children on the other side of the globe, lovers rubbing their feet together under sheets. Far away, an old blacksmith gathers up the footprint of a thief from the earth, wraps it in a banana leaf, and lays it on the coals of his forge. Far away, a woman on a porch with arthritic feet watches her grandchild chase an adder through the reeds. And even farther now, a woman runs towards freedom with only the stars for guides, her feet bleeding from thorns and rock shards, the air full of bay leaf and pine. At the road, she sees the ghost of her grandfather, his feet backwards as he steals her across the water. Verily, and his feet, a couplet, a double harness, a duet, a duel, a movement in time as the old man and woman dance on the hotel's rooftop garden on the balmy August night. The piano player sings, "Since that day you left, I've been so sad." And his feet, two candles, two mirrors, in thee we rejoice, the rivers of hell start at his feet, two caskets, labia, two twigs from a laurel broken in two yeasty loaves of bread scented by the oven, two ears of corn on the threshing floor, two swine, two crickets, two vials of sticky sweets, the angular rays of the sun on water, two reindeer across the tundra, the threads of rain, and the spinning threads of summer light. Now one atom splitting in two, his feet, two immense talons. Now the underbellies of two cows, where two bats suck milk in the moonlight, or the bellies split open, covered with flies, as two tigers feed in the shade of two thorn trees. The last to leave the mother's body, and when we return to the earth, we are barefoot. When he came back after 3 days, he did not cast out devils or heal lepers, cure with the weight of his shadow or calm the storm. He showed them his feet, and then he sat down to eat a piece of broiled fish and a honeycomb. I don't know what that means, something else. I'll read two more poems. I like writing abecedarians, alphabet, in the form of alphabets, where the first line of the poem starts at A and the last line starts in Z. And I wrote one a long time ago about breasts. And so I guess it's kind of an alpha breast poem. And it's called Twins of a Gazelle Which Feed Among the Lilies. Antlers butting against the full moon, bellies lolling on my belly, creamy chestnut crania and convex cones, dogs, they follow me around in circles. Everything I do, they mimic. When I laugh, they laugh. When I cry, they howl. Fins break water, slice the waves that make up my body. Galactopoetic forms that feed the Milky Way. Hunchbacks girdle to the chest for life. Interwoven compartments of lobules containing a network of tubes. Joined to the tubes of each lobe are ducts, and all ducts lead to the nipple. Knots for the tongue to untie. Lazy boy recliners for lips to sit on. Mushroom explosions taped to the chest. Naked reminders of the death cup cloud. O mamilla, O papilla, quivering wolf snouts nose through my dreams, rats on a whiskered basso relievo. Sleep on your back, they point to the stars, 2 points earned at birth, night points to stick to a crying baby. You times two, vaulted cupola, bald-headed misers hoarding the mammon. Women lie topless side by side on the beach, from A-flat to C-sharp to 3D. Xylophones for the sun to play on. Yes to say yes. Zegma Zucchetto Zoo. And I'll read one more poem. I can find it. I just want to thank you again very much for inviting me to come here. It's been wonderful in St. Louis, great place. I don't want to go back to Bloomington now. This is when I moved to Indiana. I was born in Texas, and when I moved to Indiana, I was really surprised by the 4 very distinct seasons. It's fat. Winter is just completely barren, and then all of a sudden spring, and it's Big Ten University, and just completely. So I think it's really very beautiful. And this is called Persephone and the Man of Letters. Of A, Persephone and the Man of Letters. Of A, of the abracadabra triangled below the navel's amulet, of the underworld still with me as I drive all night to you, following a red Trans Am, my beacon and talisman. Before me, the mysterious lands of corn and soy. Behind me, our Atlantic salty wind. Oh, glorious Susquehanna and wild grasses. Here in the pearl beads of your abacus, I am first an old-fashioned long division, then an algebra without numbers, only spheres and stars. You are all of B, the broadest letter, 2 blooms held with abundance knot, wonder split to the very beginning of your because. Fireflies troll in slow-mo on a labial mute, the bowstring scales of spring's new moon. Fireflies become a thousand eyes packed in the honey-filled magician's magnavox, i.e. the sky. Quiet now, I see 26 trees and 26 varieties of warblers speaking to me. They have information for me as I shoot straight through C, the fastest letter. I'm trying to slow down to count slowly. One Mississippi, two Fralupalipi, three Krispy Kreme, four my grandma's cornbread recipe. Come a little closer and I'll tell you the one ingredient I always leave out, and it starts with D of door number three, the delta where I backstroke the distance between the devil's trap and the deep blue. Some call it a dance, whatever the term is for it. It feels as if wind and matter had not been invented. Listen, an owl, or maybe a cuckoo resurrected. Bird of knowledge, there's nothing smart about this night. Of E, of Dolphy's bee vamp, of humidity, of day-old coffee and fries extra crispy, of 8-ball, of turning 40, of each other, of Easy Street. Of F, what spilled out after the fifth is taken. At 4 a.m., the fist greased with a train whistle's resin. Insects horned and drunk on berry liqueur, the stars above shavings from Desaad's festive board. Of G, of the gimme cap, of the grooves in vinyl where we sing of graves and worms and epitaphs, the heaviest letter. Of H, I'm sorry, husband, it is spring and I must leave you for a time in hell. Of I, J, K, and L, all private, a package of pomegranate seeds. Man of letters, of the N and the new drop full, of the O and the armadillo and the silver buttons and the 501s, of P, printed, transcribed, vertebrated, of Q, quote, that tail my heart spins on, unquote. Of R, the months when oysters are eaten, including June, July, August, and May. Of S, somewhat immaterial, smart as sparrow eye, dumb as saliva. Of the T-shaped spear hook that caught the flounder that we grilled at low tide on the beach. Man of U, sans serif, of V, the votive set in the crux of a camphor tree. Of woad waxen, the dyer's green weed, and the X-axis, and the archaic yeg. Of Z, and all that razzmatazz. Of the single snare zone time and the zebra-striped Z-bar. And it's fun to talk in Dietrich's accent. Your eyes are the stars above the Baltic. As your forefinger undoes my zip code, again, spring. What with all you have laid out for me as I climb up and down this ladder that is my life's sentence. Thank you very much.